Hi there, welcome. I'm Christian Corley. This is James McLean, and you're listening to a reaction cast from Beyond Casteris. We're talking about the newly released Doctor Who clip was part of Children in Need on Friday, which saw the a man posing as the First Doctor entering the TARDIS of a man posing as the 12th Doctor, with a man posing as a World War One soldier. That's about right, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then there was all the usual sort of Stephen Moffat humour injected into the scene, which was nice, lightweight fare for a Friday night full of depressing films and horrific sights, such as the EastEnders cast doing Step in Time. That's awful.
But what I don't get is why, when they know each year they're going to be doing this, because each year they don't really seem to have much incentive or reason to do anything more, why they don't actually write in a superfluous scene that will work for Children in Need if they're just going to take it from the Christmas episode?
It's a fair point.
It just feels like, for the sake of, especially these days, and I say these days, you can go back to 2005 when obviously they were doing it, but these days you'd think for the sake of a minute clip, you could write a minute scene that which would not be part of the actual show, but would work within sequence that you could then use to not just do for Children in Need, but, you know, serves as a promotion.
There's a distinct difference between now and 2005, though, isn't there? In 2005, it was pretty special. Now it just feels run-of-the-mill and a bit tired.
But that's why you'd think that would be a reason to do it, because you're not pulling, as per minute, a horrendous amount out of your costs. And possibly even, I don't know quite how they function, whether those costs could be somehow internally offsetted to some degree for Children in Need. I don't know how the accounting works when you're doing stuff like this. But it just sort of feels that this is very run-of-the-mill, and I don't know. It feels inherently lazy, not of the production per se, but of the BBC in general.
Yeah.
It feels like, well, each year we now have a sort of staple expectation to have something to do with Doctor Who.
It's comfortable, isn't it?
So we'll do an extra. Yeah, which serves as a promotion, which serves as advertisement, and also serves as something that will get people to tune into, as you say, an evening of, sadly, you know, quite hard hitting stuff.
I just I heard some information the other night, earlier today, I should say. So I just want to compare what I've heard today with what might have happened earlier in the weekend.
Okay.
Because I don't know the ins and outs of this, so I'm just bringing this up. Oh, no, it's not telling me. So, now I don't know what audience Children in Need gets.
Right.
Okay. A quick check shows me that it's not really... Oh, right, okay. Well, in 2009, it got 12 million viewers.
Right.
It's on every year. 2014, it was watched by a peak audience of 10 million. And, you know, so, you know, this is... a lot of people tune in to watch it. So that means that that's more audience than Doctor Who's had all year, if that follows through this year. Now, it might be said, oh, well, fewer people watching television at the moment. Well, last night, now we're recording this on Monday, so last night there was, ITV had I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, and BBC had Strictly Come Dancing results, and, the latest costume drama, whose name escapes me at the moment, which stars Matthew McFadden.
Yeah.
All three of those got over 10 million viewers.
Yeah.
Which, you know, and they're all different types of show. Which says, you know, looking back earlier the show, Doctor Who, that says an awful lot about where Doctor Who is at the moment. And, you know, we're approaching the beginning, or I'm not sure if they've actually started yet or not, but we're in that period of time where the new Doctor Who team's put together and they're producing new material, etc., which isn't going to be seen for another year. So what we have is this episode that's coming out on Christmas Day, which doesn't appear to be doing anything particularly different in terms of storytelling, in terms of you know, these familiar things that Stephen Moffat does week in, week out, it's beginning to feel a bit panto, I think.
It's interesting that I think they seem to be in an ever-decreasing circle cycle, that in a sense, because what you were saying about ratings and all these various shows is you watch this clip and you think, who is this aimed at?
Yeah.
And invariably, you'd either think, unless they are extremely blind to their own product, and understandably, given the tradition, it's aimed at Doctor Who fans primarily, rather than general audiences. So far as the clip, if you were not a Doctor Who fan, and let's bear in mind that, you know, we're not in the classic era anymore where you can have William Hartnell and go, well, some of the casual viewers will remember William Hartnell, some will, but you're talking about people in their 60 brackets, you know, 60 or so. The actual concept of the first Doctor and the latest Doctor is not something which naturally now sits with a casual audience of, you know, 25 to 45, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's aimed at fans. And yet by aiming it at fans, you lose the inaccessibility. But is it aimed at the fans because they need to try and keep that audience, to keep, you know, to sort of to give that internet surge and social media? Is it sort of going round in circles where you're not reaching anyone beyond the people who you've already reached in the hope of keeping them on board, rather than what you should be doing in a sort of more of an aggressive tactic of trying to get other people on board and bring them into the fold?
Well, that's the problem with social media, isn't it?
And this is what the problem is with the show, where the show has, again, I'm starting to sound like a fan rather than, as I prefer, a critic, where the show has arguably been focusing more and more on fans over the last few years, possibly for this reason, because they're a definable audience to catch, that you end up with no new base that will have any real interest, any intense interest in the first Doctor and what the first Doctor would think of a new console room to get into that clip. I mean, you could argue that the clip is quite light. There is a sort of comedy dynamic there, which would be accessible for more general audiences. So you could argue that they'd say, yeah, we chose that clip because it's fun, and maybe audiences will find it fun. I don't know. I agree with what you said without us even reviewing it. To me, it had, there was banter in there, which was the usual sort of witty banter that he does. And he doesn't do witty banter badly, but it just felt like the same scene over again. And I get a bit tired of this whole thing, which seems to be almost like a writer's challenge, where it's, when anyone new comes to TARDIS, how do we make this fresh? What can we say this time, which will sort of... So it becomes almost like a running gag, which becomes quite a boring gag, because it's just, you know, how many times can you sort of ironically or meta reference this whole thing of someone coming in and saying the same thing? There just wasn't anything that impressed me. There wasn't anything that I thought was terrible. I thought David Bradley did well in that clip. I enjoyed Capaldi's hair. I'm not quite sure. I always feel like I'm ragging on Gatiss, and I just think he seems quite, you know, he's a very smart professional man, but I wasn't really, for the sake of that scene, it felt a little forced. And I don't know if that was him or whether that was the way it was directed or the situation, but he looked the part, give him that.
Yeah,
and he's a great, you know, he's a good actor now, you know, does a lot of great work. So I'm not trying to, I hate people who suddenly start trying to say that he can't act. It's nothing to do with that. It just didn't feel like it was flowing very much from, I don't know. It all just felt a bit, and I think the real funny thing is that if you're going to do an extra scene for this to do just for Tudor and Need, you'd think, yeah, you'd do a TARDIS scene, because you've got a fixed set, drop them in there, a few extra lines, get back to the rest of it. You feel that would be the place that you would do a special scene for Children in Need, as they have done in the past. And yet you don't. You just get a scene which feels like it should be done for just Children in Need, when in fact it is actually part of the show. And quite a long clip as well. I don't know.
And the other thing about it is, of course, it gives us that out-of-context hint of what's to come.
Yes.
Now, you know, all trailers do that.
Mm-hmm.
And some trailers do it better than others. you know, it's not, obviously it's a clip, not a trailer, but we can treat it as a trailer because it's from the next episode, the Christmas episode, Twice Upon a Time. And regular listeners will know that I'm not particularly enthused by anything in Twice Upon a Time. And having watched that clip, my opinion has not changed on this matter.
No, no.
Very little to get excited about.
I think there's been a very big, I'm attacking them again, but it feels like a mistake from my perspective where they feel the story itself is interesting enough to use as its promotion, when to me the story itself actually seems quite bland and done before.
Well, we've had this problem before, haven't we? There was I don't even know where we are with Christmas specials. Was the last Christmas special the superhero one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, which again is like idea better than execution. Then there was the River Song one.
Oh God, yes.
Idea better than execution.
And yet, oddly, the last Christmas was one that they kept quite under wraps. The only real stuff I remember for trailering that, unless I was avoiding them, was really the rooftop scene.
Oh, the one with Father Christmas.
Yeah, the last Christmas, wasn't it? It was called. Christmas. Yeah. Which wasn't the last Christmas, it was 2 years before.
I think they had a scene with some monsters or something, I think, that they shared.
But to me, I mean, as I say, maybe because I wasn't really looking for narrative.
Right.
The pieces that they showed weren't very reflective of what the story was about.
No.
It was, and there was even a question coming up, and I remember we obviously talked about this at the time, was whether Father Christmas, Santa Claus, was actually going to be. To our horror.
The show, yeah.
Real, yeah.
Well, real. I think it was Charles and Brian's horror. I wasn't that horrid by it, to be honest.
I could just see it somehow being... And even at the end, they still had a slight hint with the tangerine on the window, which is almost questioning. But I don't know. The point being is that one felt, because they didn't give much away, that it and because, I suppose, the whole thing of the whole story was to be kept... You know, that the reveal had to be kept secret. And there was a lot of, you know, what's real, what isn't. It seemed a more interesting story. But I think this, again, like I say, just I just think it's a bad idea. And I kind of feel sorry for – actually, I feel sorry for Stephen as much as Capaldi. Because I just don't think this is the type of story that reflects what he can do. It reflects the sort of story that I think interests him and interests fans. But I just don't think it reflects what – his range should be, he would want to be remembered for.
Yeah.
Rather than have the sort of same memory as John Nathan Turner seems to have as his legacy.
Mm.
He's sort of cementing this idea that his legacy was all Day of the Doctor, the Name of the Doctor, you know, these horrendously sort of continuity inverting, over focus on their past vibe. And it's just something I just watched these clips. I just think this just was so not needed. It's not even about the Cybermen by the looks of it, really.
If you wind it all back and pull it back to where it actually is and where it is in the narrative and everything, then you know the ongoing tapestry of Doctor Who, it seems utterly pointless and irrelevant. And
it just seems, it seems like a fancy rather than a...
Yeah.
What would happen if these two came together and think, well, there's not really any time. It would almost be like, what would it be like if we got Tom Baker on running across the field towards the dish in Legopolis, suddenly had a sidestep because Peter Capaldi pulled him into an adventure.
Oh, bollocks for that. We have him while he's dangling.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, it just kind of feels that... You just don't. And I think also the other problem with this is one thing that fans like to sort of reference the past, as we've said before, is because they like to interconnect. To make the world building of Doctor Who feel real, you need to find ways of trying to imagine that the William Hartnell era is as present as the Capaldi era. They both exist in the same world building space, even though 50 years separates them in intent, technology and everything. But I think the more you try and do it with other actors, the less you manage.
Yeah.
The more he's now, you know, he's got his sparkly new series regeneration thing going on. You know, we've seen Ben and Polly, and they don't convince me at all in it.
No.
And even though people say, well, just get over it, it's just a story. Yeah, I will get over and watch it as a story, but it will not immerse, it will not do that, what it's trying to do in a way of trying to pull the two ends of Doctor Who together and unite them. It will do the opposite.
Yeah, yeah.
It sort of reminds you how far apart, because the people they've got playing are just, you can probably accept David Bradley.
I'm struggling, but I'll carry on with your point.
Well, I mean, we had to accept Richard Hurdnell, and I'd say Bradley's a better Hartnell than Hurdnell. Hurdnell did the job well.
I think Hurdnell got away with it because he wasn't doing appears to be an impersonation.
Exactly, yeah. He was just doing his own thing, and that worked, but it didn't feel like. But as soon as you lump on all the other characters as well, that to me seemed a mistake.
Yeah.
They'd have been better off trying to mesh some of the 10th Planet footage and then pulling out of black and white into colour if they needed to use Ben and Polly. Or even slipping in and out of black and white all the way through to use Ben and Polly. You know, if they needed to do that, they needed to tie it in. So it just becomes like a mess, and you think, really, was this? And if it's not needed, if it's not for a sort of Day of the Doctor extravaganza, which is meant to be a celebration of the show and all its parts, it feels like, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
It just seems so, apart from trying to seem clever. And and who are you appealing to with this? The people who are going to be watching the show anyway.
Well, the people who are going to be watching the show anyway, I would suggest a lot of them aren't the same people that are going to be watching the show in 12 months' time anyway.
Well, it could be.
So,
which in a sense, I mean, something we've not really sort of mentioned before, but that could be a good thing.
Yeah, it could be a good thing. Because I was just thinking about, you know, 12 years ago, whatever, and what we've been saying about Stephen Moffat is Russell T Davies was not chasing fans, was he? At any point, was he chasing fans? He'd leave the odd Easter egg for the fans. There's nothing explicit about the you know, retro continuity or anything like that. Or even when the Master came back, it was just, you know, he's like me, but he's mental. That sort of thing. And so going forwards, one would hope that there is a very different attitude, and they are, it is, from what we've seen so far, the one positive for me, I suppose, it does appear to be a show that's looking for new fans or a new audience.
Yes, and I think that's, like we've said, I think that is very important. And then hopefully, if it manages to do that by being good, then any audiences which have left may actually suspiciously return to see what the fuss is about. And hopefully, if it's good, then yes, that'll be the case. There'll be hurrahs all round. But yeah, no, I think you're quite right. I think that's, and that'll be interesting. And I think it's the right way to do it as well. So to strip it back, strip all this fandom back, and just see if you can play something fresh, new, that doesn't carry on the legacy of what we've had, which is just feeling very, very, very tired.
Okay, let's head over to Facebook now, where I polled our reader in his and her various forms about various identities, what they felt about the clip that we saw on Children in Need from Twice Upon a Time, which I don't know if you've noticed, but that's a very uncomfortable acronym. Anyway, so Andrew Brooker's First Respond, who says it was fine, being out of context, it's quite difficult to hold any strong opinion, as we said. I will say that the suggestion we've been given of the plot, how they meet Mark Gatiss's character, does sound less than straightforward, and it's worth noting that the expression that so bothers his character was actually coined in that era. It does leave me hankering for the days when they filmed an independent minisode for the charity events. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it agrees with everything that James and I've just said. Jonathan Roberts is what I expected from Moffat, a pretty predictable script. The acting from everyone seems to be top-notch from the snippet I saw. Jonathan Appleton. Hello, Jonathan. He says, I thought there were some witty lines. The first Doctor entering the wrong TARDIS, the I thought I'd be younger line. But I'm still doubtful about bringing the first Doctor back. The knowing postmodern tone of the show, as it is now, just jars for me when set against a programme as it was in Hartnell's era, and leaves me feeling they're taking the mick out of it. And somehow Hartnell's gentler, playful side has become lost over the years. Whenever the character's been brought back, he's portrayed as a stern and grumpy, when if you look back at his episodes, there was much more to him than that. Considerably. Very difficult to disagree with that. Trevor Arthur, how well would the First Doctor have recognised the regeneration energy? He'd never done it before, and it never used to look like that. It's a good point. I suppose you could possibly say that maybe he'd probably seen other people regenerate on Gallifrey, but with regards to the effects, can't disagree with that. Nick Caulfield, it did its job in terms of making me want to watch the actual episode, if only to find out what's going on. It also reminded me of how much I will miss Peter Capaldi. I have no problem with Jodie Whittaker. I would be missing Peter Capaldi, whoever followed him, but I really feel as though he's been taken from us just as he was getting going. I do hope he does some big finish further down the line, like David Tennant. Very little to disagree with there. I think all strong points.
Okay, have we got anything else to talk about specifically regarding this clip? Is there anything you want to highlight?
I'm afraid not.
No? Okay, that's fine. Because in a few weeks' time, that's it for Stephen Moffat. So we're going to know what the Stephen Moffat era is. And we're going to be possibly thinking about, you know, where did it go wrong, basically. Unless Twice Upon a Time turns out to be the greatest thing since the Day of the Doctor. Which anything's possible. So maybe we'll talk about that after Christmas, but...
I'm still not even... I mean, again, we'd have to see the context of the clip. But there was that bit where they... the whole thing where he comes in and he sort of talks about the TARDIS, and then at the end, he doesn't recognise that he's the Doctor. And I think, you know, obviously the context might change that, but it just seemed, as a clip, it seemed really nonsensical.
Well, it's just time crashing, isn't it?
But he'd walked through police box doors, so he'd walked into a police box, TARDIS, and for some reason, which may be explained in the show, he had no idea that it was... And so in the context of the clip itself, it just looked really odd.
He did the same thing with Time Crash, didn't he, with the Doctor not recognising himself?
Yeah, and I never quite understood that, because I always got the impression that the Doctor did recognise, or Time Lords recognised themselves. But maybe and maybe other Time Lords, unless they were, because that was also kind of feeling in the Fourth Doctor's era, you know, that you'd see Baruza, or you'd know it was him regardless of a generation, because you'd be exactly,
or the fella from Midsummer Murders in the Armageddon Factor.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Barry Jackson, you know, he bumps into him, recognises him straight away. Well, he recognises the Doctor straight away. And then you've got the Five Doctors and the Three Doctors, and they both know, they all know who each other is.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's no, oh, who are you? Well, I'm you. No, you're not. Yes, I am. It's all, it's you, is it? Oh. Yeah, that brings us to the end of this reaction cast. You can have a look at the Twice Upon a Time clip in the show notes, just to remind yourself. And maybe get at what we're... edging towards there, get the gist of our mini review of things there.
I wish it was a little more upbeat, by the way.
Yes, still dry, yeah.
I feel like, you know, we're coming up to the final part of an era, coming up to Capaldi's very last one, coming up to Moffat's last one, and I don't really have any particular wish to sort of be berating, or not even berating, grumbling about something which is their milestone.
It is grumbling, but also it's out of context, isn't it? We're all slaves to that. They're slaves to what they share. We're slaves to what they shared. We can't really, you know, expand on anything until we've seen the rest of it.
It might be ace.
As I say, it could be ace. Could be superb. We will find out at Christmas from James and I. That's it. Look out for another podcast from us later in the week.
This is a Beyond Cast Cerberus podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCastCerberus.com.